Welcome to Speak Up International with Rita Burke and Elton Brown.
On Speak Up International, as you know, we seek to inspire, to educate, and to inform. Today, we have a person who is going to be telling his story, and he comes from North Carolina. His name is Mr. Antoine Thompson. He's written a book for teens. He is a coach and mentor who focuses on personal development. He's also the founder and executive director of JLT Fieldhouse, which is a not-for-profit organization. I know for a fact that Mr. Thompson's story is going to help us on Speak Up International to meet our goals. Let us welcome Mr. Antoine Thompson, please.
Hello, Elton and Rita. Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate the opportunity, and I really look forward to sharing my passion and my mission of helping develop the next generation of leaders, which are our young people.
Antoine, that was one of the first things that jumped out at me is how focused you are in terms of the challenges that the next generation of leaders more or less face, but they're not really doing much to prepare themselves. You seem to be that guiding light that wants to guide them into personal development. What type of school curriculums do you think our youth needs in order to be developed?
Well, Elton, that's a great question, and that's a long list. And if I could replace everything they're learning now, I would replace it with everything that they need. And to be honest with you, I could just give you, there's probably a top three to five. Financial literacy is one thing young people have no clue about. Writing checks, balancing a checkbook, communication, how to communicate with different groups of people. They talk to adults the way they talk to their friends. And understanding there's a respect factor that has to be accounted for in all of their communications. Conflict resolution, how young people deal with adversity. They allow their emotions to dictate their results of any of their conflicts or disagreements that they may have. And that has a lot to do with maturity. And I think the other big thing is it all starts at home. I think we have a generation of parents, unfortunately, they're trying to be friends with their kids instead of being parents to them. And that is a big part of what's preventing them from growing to being mature adults.
In your bio, I read about you wanting to help these young people that you work with to complete their personal development. Expand on that term for me. What exactly do you mean by expanding your personal development?
That stems from them understanding that they have the ability to control their own destinies. And a lot of them don't have the confidence and self-esteem to follow their dreams, and they rely on other people to direct them and guide them. And in most cases, people don't understand these young people, don't understand their passions and their missions. And if you don't understand it, you can't guide and lead them in a direction that they need or want to go in. And that's a big part of what I meant by that, because the young people I work with, we have a lot of conversations about that. And I ask a lot of questions. And those are two things that are really important to me, is asking questions and not judging the answers that you get from them, because they're kind of trying to share with you who they are and what they see in themselves at that particular time.
You wrote a book, The Ultimate Guide to Success for Preteens and Teens. What are the three main points in that book that you want to impress on the minds of our young adults?
Great question. I always love this question because it's the heart of everybody's success, not just kids, but I really wanted to start with them because they have the longest journey ahead of them. And those three points, Elton, is simplicity, effort, and attitude. Because regardless of what we do in life, we already know that life is not simple, but we have to focus on the simple aspects of what we're trying to achieve. And then the effort part of it, once you establish what it is that you want, you have to understand that it takes work. Nothing comes easy. If everything was easy, everybody would be doing it. And the last part, which is attitude, to me is the most important of the three, because you can't simplify anything and you can't put forth any effort if you don't have the right attitude. So a positive attitude is the most important thing. And I always like to end it by saying one of my favorite quotes is your attitude almost always determines your altitude in life.
I like that. That is really deep. simplicity, effort, and attitude. So what does positive attitude look like, sounds like, behaves like? Talk to our audience about that, please.
So I'll give a perfect example of attitude. And when you talk about relationships between kids and educators, kids and their parents, kids and employers, most kids go into something thinking about the end result. So their attitude is about how can I get what I want? So they don't take into account that the people that they're dealing with are also trying to guide them and make them understand that, hey, you know, you have to work for it, and your attitude determines whether you get that or not. And then a lot of what we hear are young people that are very combative and unappreciative of the things that are provided for them on a daily basis. So for me, the attitude is a big part of it, because it's the best way to connect with kids, because once they understand that you have their best interest at heart, it typically changes their attitude. And I've seen that in the work that I've done with kids.
Isn't that fascinating? You said you need to connect with the kids. There's an adage that says you need to connect before you correct. And that certainly works. You connect before you can correct. And I think many educators and parents alike and caring adults need to remember that. You can't just walk in and correct. You need to connect at a wonderful level, at a special level, before you can correct. So thank you for responding to that question.
Yes, ma'am. I want to steal that. I like that. You must connect before you correct. I like that. No royalty payments coming your way, though.
Well, you never know. We may bill you.
Talk to us about the JLT Fieldhouse. And what is its mission?
I get goosebumps when I get that question, because believe it or not, we wouldn't be talking about the previous topic or any of this without JLT Fieldhouse. JLT Fieldhouse is named after my late father, who actually was not my biological father. He adopted my older brother and myself when we were really young, when he married my mom. And what he did after. That transformed our lives and gave us guidance, love, and direction. But more importantly, he raised us as though we were his biological sons. And he served in the Marine Corps for 30 years, served two tours of Vietnam. And unfortunately, we lost him to leukemia in 1996. And when he passed, it was one of the most devastating things for me to deal with. First major setback, or I would say, adverse time in my life. And I searched long and hard for years to find a way to honor the man that made me the man that I am today. And so I started JLT Fieldhouse, which stands for Joe Lewis Thompson Fieldhouse. And it's based on paying forward what he did for my brothers and I, which is show leadership, guidance, and love without judgment, and giving kids an opportunity to learn from their mistakes when they do make them, because they're going to. But at the same time, always being there for them when they need them. And it is based around the sport of basketball, because we utilize basketball as the catalyst to connect with kids, because we know kids love sports. So if you can get them in, and we teach life lessons through the sport of basketball. And this has been a tremendous asset to our community, and I know that it could be for many other kids as well.
It sounds like you were pretty well connected to your father, so to speak. And I hear the emotion in your voice as you talk about losing him. That truly is touching. I find it very moving. Now, when you coach, when you counsel, when you mentor, there's no questions. You need to have a set of objectives. So how do you measure, how do you know when you've met your objectives for these young people you're working with?
That is a great question, Rita. And you know, believe it or not, you answered it by saying that there are no objectives when you go in, because when kids come to you, you already know they need something. So it goes back to what you said earlier. I take the opportunity to connect. So once I connect, then we know where we need to go. It's not where I want them to be. It's where we collectively work to get to. And there have been some transformations in some kids that have gone far beyond my expectations, all because of the connection and then the trust factor that was developed over time. And in some instances, they've been in short, like when I say weeks, and sometimes it's taken years. But even the ones that have taken weeks are just as important as the ones that have taken years, because the end result is the most important thing. And that is getting kids to believe in themselves and having confidence and making decisions, right, wrong, or indifferent, and understanding that they're going to learn from those decisions over time.
That is a lot of information to have to crunch. So what soft skills do you think are really important to know so when they go out in the world, they are prepared? Because it's not about the head knowledge, the hard skills. That's a lot to do with these soft skills.
Yes.
If they can't communicate, if they can't get up there and project, they're going to be at a loss.
I think one of the first things, Elton, is they have to have goals for themselves. You know, they just can't fly through life and just kind of take what gets. Something goes well. Oh, that's what I'm going to do. I use analogy of like, love, and passion. You know, we all like things and then we don't like things. And we love things and then we fall out of love of things. But when you're passionate about something, that passion is what drives you. Like what we're talking about today is my passion. I can talk about it for days, weeks, months, years. But that's one of the things I tell kids is, you know, you must find your passion, because once you find your passion, it will help you establish the goals that you want. Once you establish those goals, guess what? You've simplified what you want to accomplish. Now, at least step two, you've got to put forth the effort to achieve those goals. And then once you achieve those goals and maintain the right attitude, that road to success becomes easier. Yes, there are going to be some dips and some valleys and peaks in that process, but your attitude will help you overcome those. And the other major part, I think, is accountability / responsibility. That is one of the major things that young people don't take account of for themselves, personal accountability and personal responsibility. It's always somebody else's responsibility or somebody else's fault when they don't succeed at something. And when you allow kids to blame others, they will consistently do that. But if you hold them accountable, they have to step back and say, hey, you know, yeah, that's on me. I got to accept responsibility for that. And hopefully later on, I have a perfect example encompassing all of those.
Accountability, responsibility for behavior. No question about that. Now, we're speaking with Mr. Antoine Thompson, who works with youth. And on Speak Up International, we seek to inspire, educate, and inform. And the story you're telling us, there's no question, is helping us to meet our objectives to Speak Up International. What made you want to work with young people? What made you want to coach and mentor young people? Talk to us about that.
There are a couple of things, and they all kind of tie together in the end. My coaching career actually started in 1985. I actually did not make the basketball team. High school got cut every year, but I loved the sport. And I'm like, you know, I want to find a way to contribute to a sport that I love, but I'm not able to participate in. And I was afforded the opportunity to coach a youth league, 10 and 11 year old boys. And the team I happened to coach turned out to be young boys that were not selected to be a part of the league. They had more players than they had coaches. So they were reaching out, and a friend of mine asked if I'd be interested. And I was like, absolutely, would love to. So the team I was given was not a talented team. None of them had actually played before. And the best thing about it was what happened at the end of that season. And my team had the same losing record as that handpicked team that these young men were not selected for. And what it taught me was I had an innate ability to connect with kids and to make them believe themselves. And they achieved something more than they had expected. And even with the losing record, they thought as though they had won something. And the impact of that is that was almost 40 years ago. And one of the gentlemen in that book and on that team wrote a testimonial that is in that book that you referenced earlier. So the relationship started 39 years ago, and it made such an impact that he remembers it almost like it was yesterday. And that leads to the second part of my answer to that question. It's one of the other reasons, I think, is because I honestly believe I was given a gift from the man from above to lead and guide young people, because my wife and I weren't able to have kids of our own. And I feel as though he said, I'm not going to bless you with kids of your own because I've given you a gift to impact more. And I've embraced that to the fullest. And that is what wakes me up, along with the remembrance of my father with JLT Fieldhouse, to put forward and do what I can to help the next generation of young people.
One of the things that I've discovered is the lack of basic like math, spelling, I'll just say history. There seems to be a major disconnect. In Canada, Rita and I belong to a book club. Well, this book club is actually for youth, and they get together quarterly for about 6 weeks, and we read books with them. I found that some of the kids can't read. I mean, they just flat out can't read. And it's heartbreaking because for me personally, one of the kids that I work with, I get the feeling that they have a lot of responsibilities. And so they maybe don't have the time to spend with their child in order to make sure that he gets up to speed. How do you deal with children or young adults that are lacking basic school skills that should have been taught to them in school?
As you asked that question, there's a couple of examples that have popped up that I've dealt with in that situation. I'll use example of training young people through the JLT Fieldhouse program. And in one-on-one sessions, I've had conversations with kids and we start talking about education because I ask questions and during the workouts, because I want to know how their life's going. What are they struggling with? Because they'll tell you without telling you. And if you let them talk long enough, they will give you everything that you need, that all of the answers that you need to help them solve or problems to solve. And innately, there have been reading, comprehension, math issues that have come up. And what I found is the kids are being given too much accountability and responsibility for learning things that they haven't been taught how to learn. And that is the biggest issue. I notice what's affecting kids here in the United States is that the education system is just a revolving door. Read this, turn this in, here's your test. Read this, turn this in, here's your test. Next grade, here's your work. Read this, turn in the work, here's your test. And then when they get to higher education, we're seeing fewer and fewer kids applying to go to college. You know why? They know that the degree that they're going to school for, they're not going to be able to use when they get out, but yet they're going to amass all of this debt. So they are aware, but it also creates a struggle for them. What am I going to do? What other options do I have? And nobody's giving them any guidance and direction in that, because all that's there for them is 12 years of school, 4 to 6, 8 years of college, get out there and make it happen.
At the beginning of our chat, you alluded to communication as an important tool to help your mentees with. You talked about conflict resolution. There's no question, I don't have to tell you this, you know this, that reading, literacy plays a huge role. Where does that fit into everything that you do in terms of books and encouraging reading and those kinds of things? Talk to us about that.
As far as, can you ask the question one more time for me?
Yeah, I'm saying where it is. Actually picking up a book and encouraging the teens to read. Where does that fit into your whole program?
It's first and foremost, it starts with what are their interests? Again, going back to the connect thing that you mentioned, once you get kids to connect, I'm always trying to guide them to the next step, not telling them what it is, but guiding them. And what it all innately comes back is, have you researched that? What do you know about that? And encouraging them, well, if that's something of interest to you, you probably want to read up and learn more about it to find out if that's exactly what you want to do. Because I think you both know, too, you just can't say, hey, you need to start reading a book a month. You know, because they're not going to do that. Because guess what? We're doing what parents do, telling them what to do. As soon as you start telling kids what to do, they tune you out. And I think that that's one of the things that I've learned in my approach is about the growing with them, getting on their level and grow with them. It's not dumbing myself down. It's getting to the level of a young person that you want to be a mature, responsible, and contributing adult to society.
Your stepfather adopted you and treated you as his. He was dad, which is honorable, if I may say so myself. What attributes have you picked up and made your own from your dad that you use when you're talking to the young adults at your educational center?
Two things. One, and no disrespect at all, I've never, ever considered my father my stepdad. He was my father. And because if I say stepdad, that's giving credit to a man that is only responsible for me coming into this world. So my dad's my dad. And so I just wanted to clarify that. Obviously, you didn't know, so it's no disrespect intended. But to answer your question, simple quote that my dad shared with my brothers and I over and over again, you help people whenever you can without any expectation of reward, pure and simple. That is what fuels me and is what happens at JLT Fieldhouse, and it's also what happens with Coach T's Corner Mentoring Program. So I help kids without any expectation of reward. If there were any reward, it's seeing their success.
So when you help these kids and then they go away, trade school or university or college, have any of them actually come back and let you know how much you have influenced them and where they are today because of you?
Yes, sir. It's a young man who was, I coached an AAU team in 1990. And in 2016, he ended up winning the state high school basketball championship as a head coach at a high school there. And that summer, he came back to my JLT Fieldhouse summer camp as a guest. And this, what he shared with the campers brought him to tears, brought them to tears, brought me to tears. And to this day, I only coached this young man for 2 years, but the connection and what he felt as though I taught him in those 2 years, he actually gave me a piece of the championship net that they cut down after they won the championship. So that's one of the examples. And then the other just happened about a week ago, actually. The high school that I coached from 1988 to 1992, I coached the young men when they were freshmen and sophomores, and during their senior years, they won the state title. And they celebrated the 30th anniversary of that championship this past Friday. And I was contacted by four of the players as well as the coach, and they wanted me to be a part of that celebration because they felt as though those first 2 years of me coaching them contributed to them winning a state title.
That is so touching, so moving. I am very, very impressed. I know you talked about your dad and the influence of him on your life. What would you say is the best piece of counselor advice you've ever been given?
Oh, my gosh. This is actually a funny one, though. So in front of me, I have a framed uniform from my father in Marine Corps. And on top of that are stacks of letters that he hand wrote to me over the years when he was overseas. And in one of those letters was one of my first romantic interest. And I was having some issues with how I was going to deal with that situation. And I remember writing my dad about it. And out of all those letters, this is the one response I always remember him replying back. He always wrote back every time we wrote. And his response was, son, and he said it just like this. He goes, son, do you think just because you have a car and you have a job that every girl is going to like you? You must show them who you are, be respectful, and if it was meant to be, it will be. And so those are, that's just one of those things. My dad was not a man of many words, but what he said meant a lot.
Was that meant to be?
No, thank God, no. I'm actually, my wife and I will be actually celebrating our 20th wedding anniversary this year. So, I have a true queen and a great supporter.
That is Wonderful. Here in Canada, and I know in the United States, there are many marginalized communities. A lot of the kids don't get food. They're at home. They just don't have the money to feed them. What does your educational center do for individuals that just, I mean, they can't learn anything if they're hungry. I mean, that's just a fact. So how do you handle that?
Well, we actually do fundraisers for other nonprofits here in the area. We do for children that have been removed from home because of domestic violence or sexual misconduct, if you will. But we don't directly do. We actually have a Meals on Wheels route that we sponsor, and we've done for 7 years, I believe, leading up to COVID. For 2 years of COVID, we didn't. But that's our contribution to helping kids in the community, specifically the lower income areas of Salisbury, which is where I actually live.
I'm curious. I'm always curious. There's no question that you're passionate about helping youth to actualize and to become the persons they're on this earth to be. What's your own educational background?
Oh, this is a good one. So I actually went to college for education, did not like it, started cooking. I love to cook. So I parlayed that into a 20-year career in the club industry. I was a sous chef, an executive chef, food and beverage manager, assistant manager, ended up being a general manager of a country club here in Salisbury. So my education is in management, country club management. But and more importantly, throughout all of those years, one of the biggest assets that I was always told was my ability to connect with the older members and the younger members, meaning the kids, so much so that I look forward to going to work to interact with the kids more so than with the adults. And so regardless of what part of life, if you have a gift, it always shows itself in any environment. So that's one of the things. And that's a skill I get from my mom, my social skills. Because my mom is very outgoing and I have a very outgoing personality. So that's the one thing that I'm very most, that's what I'm most proud of, attributes I've gotten from my mom.
I think most Black women have social skills. I remember as a kid going to church in at 3 o'clock. By the time my mother had to say hello to everybody, she got to hug everybody. I'm sitting on the steps waiting for her. I'm like, why wouldn't this woman come out of there? I go in the church. I says, Mom, come on. Okay, I'll be out in 5 minutes. Well, a half an hour later, she's still in there laughing and joking and talking to people. And so I find that that was probably very important then for women to network, to make sure that they had these connections that they knew they were going to need in the future, immediate future. It was something that was very, very important. I'm trying to figure out how and where does the JL Fieldhouse sit educationally? Were individuals funneled to you from, I guess, regular educational centers, and they were sent maybe to you for special treatment? I hate using that word. Or was JLT Fieldhouse just another, I don't want to say just another, that's not right, but an educational center that kids were allowed to attend?
So I think the best way to answer that, Elton, would be at the time, at the origination of JLT Fieldhouse, I was coaching basketball at this particular private school. And I approached the head of school about starting it and telling her about what I felt the benefits were. It would be an opportunity for me to truly showcase the benefits of teaching young people about life through sport. So she goes, sure. So my first 2 years at this school, I won 6 games and lost 34 in 2 years. So not very good. The next 8 years, or I should say the next 7 years, we went to 7 straight championship games. We won 5 of those, and 3 of those were undefeated seasons. 75% of the kids on those teams were part of JLT Fieldhouse one-on-one group clinic summer camp summer league program. So year in and year out and year round, they were taught about accountability, responsibility, communication, teamwork, conflict resolution through sport that in fact carries over to life. So through this process during the summer, word of mouth got out and it grew from just the school where I was coaching that we had kids from multiple schools that reached as far as Winston-Salem and Charlotte, which are 30 and 40 miles away. So people heard and saw the benefits of, and so it started to grow from there. People started to see the results of that. And it's one of those things, when you believe in yourself enough, all you want to do is be given an opportunity to showcase what you can do. And the end result was to literally turn a program around. The irony in all of this, and I think this is, I want to bring this full circle. In 1990, going back to when I said I was coaching the freshman and junior varsity team at Meadowbrook High School, well, I coached both of those teams at the same time, and both teams won the district. They had a combined record of 30 wins and 4 losses. Well, the local paper did an article, interviewed me for an article, and I was actually about to start coaching an AAU team that summer. Well, in that article, one of the things that I said in was that I believed that I could get somewhere and build a program. Well, I didn't know it was going to take me 30 years to do it, but I believed enough in myself that I could get somewhere, build a program. And that's what I did at this particular school. So that's one of those things I think it's important to share with kids, too. You may not get what you want when you want, but you will get what you want when you need to get it.
I really like it that you seem to massage and tease the best out of the young people that you work with. I really like what I'm hearing. And I'm sure that they benefit tremendously and they appreciate everything you're doing. I want to know, how do you teach those young people to communicate? What are some of the strategies you use to teach them? Because that's one of the elements of what you do. How do you teach them to communicate?
It's going to be a short answer, but I hope it brings home what I do. I empower them to be responsible for their own success. And one of the things is, if they just listen to me as a coach, if they only listen to me as a coach, they only receive the information from coach to player or from coach to student. But if I say, this is what we do, when you see, you can determine what you do, because I allow kids to fail. That's part of my coaching, is I allow them to fail. I give them the tools to succeed, but they got to find out what works and what doesn't work. And this may be a great opportunity, if you don't mind, I want to share a story that really encompasses communication, accountability, responsibility, teamwork, and goal setting, all of those. And this happened 2 years ago. So we had a player on a team that had broken a team rule. And I knew nothing about this. And the boys that I'm coaching were 7th and 8th grade boys. So these are 12 and 13 year old boys. So I knew nothing about this. And 2 of the 8th graders came to me the next day and they said, Coach T, we had a player that broke a rule and they wouldn't let me know about it. My immediate response was, well, what are we going to do about it? And they were expecting me to say, okay, I'll take care of it. I said, no, what are we going to do about it? And without hesitation, this is what they said to me. They said, we want him to sit in the bleachers and watch us run for his mistake. And I said, okay. I kind of smiled. I'm like, well, okay, that's kind of harsh. But I said, I like that. And I like that so much, I'm going to use that as my punishment, because I couldn't think of anything at the time. I'm like, so I'll steal theirs. But if you guys want to assess any further disciplinary action, that'll be up to you as a team to determine. So I called the young man over and asked him if he had, in fact, committed the infraction. And he admitted that he had. So I said, well, here's what's going to happen. You're going to sit and you're going to watch your teammates run. So I make them run. And I've never been a coach. I don't believe in running for punishment, because it's not punishing. You're not punishing them. you're just making them run. Everything has to have a purpose. So I've always incorporated skills in part of our training and so forth to condition, if you will. So after they're running and after practice, they had a little 5-minute meeting as a team. And after 5 minutes, they came back to me and they said, "Coach, we've all discussed it, voted on it, and it's unanimous. For our next game, which happened to be the alumni game, biggest game, a home game of the year, this young man would not get to play, nor would he get to dress out with the team, but he could sit on the bench with the team." And I'm like, "If you guys voted on that, I support it." But that's not the end, because this is the most important part of it. So I asked a young man, I said, "Do you understand what's happening here?" And he goes, "Yes, sir." And I said, "Well, what are you going to do now?" He says, "I'm going to go home and tell my parents why I'm not playing and why I won't be dressing for the next game." After that incident, we won the game and all that. We ended up going undefeated that season. That situation was never brought up again. He wasn't treated any differently. The situation was resolved, put behind us, and we moved forward. The lesson, and then, by the way, I couldn't tell you this story without getting their permission to tell it, because I told them it was a team thing. So I want to respect something that I agree with them. They're like, I told them this is a story that many people need to hear. So they understand the power and the ability that these young people have if they're given the opportunity. I empowered them to hold themselves accountable and responsible. They communicated with their team and they came up with a solution to a problem. A solution that benefited everyone, including the young man and the team, and ultimately the team by winning a championship. And as a coach, you couldn't be prouder to see your players take accountability and take control of a situation that could have easily gotten out of hand.
I think this is a beautiful thing where the parents or you or anyone basically had to step in to do anything. They took care of it themselves, which was an excellent form of leadership and working together as a team. So how can parents get in touch with you if they're interested in maybe having you mentor their kids, help stimulate the kids' passions? How are they able to do that?
So, you know, with social media, so many ways. The easiest way is my email address, which is Coach T at CoachT'sCorner.com. And my website, you can go to our JLTFieldhouse.org website, and you can also get through Instagram, which is JLT_Fieldhouse. Also, we are on Facebook as well. And I do have a Coach T's Corner and JLT Fieldhouse Facebook pages as well. And also on my website, I actually have free resources on there as well for parents to download the Sea of Success, an overview of what the Sea of Success is, breaking down simplicity, effort, and attitude even more so they understand the impacts and what those three things can do for their young people's lives. And many parents, I think the other message I want to share is I'm not trying to be their parents. I'm trying to be an extension of them and providing their kids what they're not getting from the education system, and also a support system for what they're trying to teach their own kids, and also provide some insight from my experience.
The story you told about that young person and how did the team circled that person to help them to grow and to become reminds me of something a friend of mine who's a vice principal does. She says, when you call out, and sometimes we need to call people out for the infractions, you need to call back in. And I see that in what you just described. There was a calling out for inappropriate behavior, but the person wasn't left out. They were called back in. And that's a wonderful strategy. It's a wonderful strategy for including people, even those people who sometimes mess up, so to speak. So I like that approach. That was truly wonderful. Now, is there anything that you haven't told us or told our audience, told our listeners that you want to talk about now?
I honestly believe we've touched on a lot, but I think if there's a message that I would want to convey is that parents are not out there by themselves. Even though I'm not a parent per se, I've worked with so many kids, and kids have shared with me things that they have not told their parents. And the reason they've done that is because I've developed a level of trust with them, and so much so that they feel comfortable sharing with me and knowing that what they share with me is going to be in confidence. But more importantly, if they can do that with me, that means they can do that with their parents. And I think for some parents, I would only say, listen to your kids and don't judge, because most of the time they just want to be heard, and they get advice from everybody all day, every day. Sometimes they just want to share and then walk away because they're releasing and getting things off their chest. And then it gives you an opportunity to reflect on what they've shared with you. And then you in turn can create a conversation after when you follow up. I think that's the other part too, is sometimes you got to let kids lead the conversation. They already know that there's an unwritten rule that the authority figure in the house are the parents. But at the same time, they are a family. That means every family, everyone in the family should have a voice at some given time. That doesn't necessarily mean giving total control, but it's about having conversations, building relationships with your kids. Like I've mentioned with my parents, what's so great about our relationship is we've always kept the lines of communication open, whether good, bad, or indifferent. And then I think that's what's really important for parents to understand is your kids already lean on you and expect you to lead, but sometimes they expect you just to let them lead some, and it'll only enhance and grow their relationship over time.
All right, I have a sticky question to ask. How are you funded, the JLT Field House and your other projects? How are they funded? Are they funded through the state?
No, we actually have local donors, and we also have local foundations that we get grants from annually to help also with, but we also have fees associated with some of our programming. I.e. our summer camps, summer leagues, and private lessons and things. But so the donations and donors, we have annual donors, and then we have semi-annual donors. And then we also have a couple of anonymous donors that we're most grateful for that donate every year. And they just ask that we don't tell anybody. And I'm like, yeah, I'm not going to say anything. You're helping me help kids. So do appreciate that.
I want to talk a little bit about the type of kids that go to your school. Are they from marginalized communities?
No, it's varied. It's varied. I'm actually no longer coaching school, but I just still do my programming. But kids come from all walks of life, and we encourage that. And we actually, to your point, is one of them so important about those anonymous donors. They allow the underprivileged kids in our community to participate in our programming. And that's really important to me, is to be able to connect with as many of our young people as we can, specifically young kids of color in the lower income areas.
What types of advertisement do you use in order to reach out to your communities?
Most of it is through social media. We don't do a lot of outside. Our local paper, we used to do some things there, but not much there. But there's a couple of sites that we actually reach out to other schools within a 50-mile radius, sharing with our programming. Peach Jar is one of the sites that we utilize to reach administrators and also other schools in the system, sharing what we do and offering opportunities. Because one of the things we do too, that I do, I should say, is speaking with young people as well as with parents. And I do that in small groups with our camps as well as our summer leagues. Because I feel that that's the other big part too, is my message doesn't just have to be with the kids. It's got to be with the parents, because you must connect with the parents before you can get with the kids. And I understand that as well.
I'm glad that you talked a little bit about the parents, because you obviously couldn't do what you do without working closely with parents. Please expand a little bit on the collaboration or the necessity, the importance of working closely with parents of the young people that you work with.
Why that is so important, I get the best way I can explain it. When parents reach out to me, we'll use JLT Fieldhouse example. When parents reach out to me, the first thing they're thinking about is, I want my son or daughter to get better at basketball. Well, I'm like a kid listening to a parent. I don't hear that, because that's a given. And I already know that. And I could do that with my eyes closed. I have enough experience. I know how to assess kids, and I'm confident in my abilities to work the skills and all that. What I'm doing when they come in, I'm already assessing where they are mentally, where they are emotionally. And also, I watch the communication between student and parent. That tells me a lot about the dynamics of what's going on at home. Because I've had situations where I had a parent come to the gym with her daughter for a lesson. Both the daughter and the mother had been crying. And I'm like, okay, you're coming to a lesson and you both are upset. Something's not right. So I asked the mom about it. And she started explaining to me that her daughter had been disrespectful to her. And my response was, and you're rewarding her by bringing her to me to give her a lesson? I said, that's not happening. Not on my watch. I'm not going to be a contributor and enable this kind of behavior. So I sat down and said, hey, you've already paid for the time. So the time is yours, but it's not going to be giving you a lesson. So we'll have a conversation. Well, that conversation led to finding out and getting to the root of the problem in an hour, almost like a Law and Order episode. We got it resolved in an hour. But what it was, it turned out that the young lady, the father of the young lady and the mother are not together. He lives in another state. She wanted to see him, but the mom wasn't able to get her there. So she was lashing out because she couldn't go see her father. And there were some other issues there. But the three of us ended up sitting there having a conversation, and they left feeling better. The daughter apologized to the mom and everything was fine. But that's just an example of how I pay attention to what's happening. And I'm always aware of the conscious of the dynamics between a child and their parent.
Well, Mr. Thompson, I really want to thank you so much for telling us exactly what's going on at the educational center that you work from, which is the JLT Fieldhouse. We learned so much from you about what you're looking for when you receive these helping them get soft and hard skills, which are really, really important. And then to top it off, communication and you being able to zero in on areas that each of the kids need to develop so that when they leave JLT Fieldhouse, they're prepared. They're going to go out there and flip the world upside down based on the confidence that you give them, along with the foundational education, which is so, so, so important. And I wish that we had about 1,000 clones of you that we could spread across the U.S. and Canada in order to help these kids, because you, sir, are kind of like a net. Catch all of these kids before they actually hit rock bottom and get them back on their feet and send them on their way, kind of like toddlers when they fall. Pick them up and you say, it's okay. It's all right. Go ahead. And the kid stops crying and, you know, waddles away. So thank you again, Mr. Thompson, for your passion and your determination to take our marginalized youth and make them better.
It's my pleasure. And I want to thank you, Rita and Elton, for the opportunity. Yes. Yes. I appreciate it. And like I said, it's always a pleasure to get the opportunity to share my passion and, more importantly, in detail like we did today. And, you know, sometimes you can talk about it on the surface, but sometimes you really have to get down to the nitty gritty and really share what's important, because our young people they're in dire straits right now, and it is important that we get as many people involved in their lives and let them know that they're loved, cared about, and we want to guide, direct, and lead them to success.
Thank you for listening to Speak Up! International. If you wish to contact Mr. Thompson, please be prepared to leave your name, your email address, and the reason you wish to contact Mr. Thompson through the website at www.jltfieldhouse.org. Are you interested in the opportunity to be interviewed and have your cause promoted by Speak Up! International? We invite you to connect to us by sending a message That includes your name, company, or organization's name, the valuable service you offer to your community, and your email address to info@speakuppodcast.ca. Worried about your confidence as an interviewee? Don't fret. Speak Up! Exclamation Point International can provide you with the necessary training so you shine during an interview. To receive training information and a 10% discount about the Speak Up! Exclamation Point Podcast Interviewee Training Program, email us at info@speakuppodcast.ca. You can also reach us using Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and LinkedIn. To connect to our podcast, use Spotify or your favorite podcast platform and search for Speak Up! Exclamation Point International. You can also find our podcast using our web address, www.speakuppodcast.ca. Our logo has the woman with her finger pointing up, mouth open, speaking up. At Speak Up! Exclamation Point International, we aim to inspire, to inform, and to educate.